welcome to Ray.
Ooh, I got a body
Ray.
Full of liquor with a cocaine kicker Day. And I'm feeling like I'm 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
So lay it down.
Friday.
Lay it down. You got
show,
your
baby.
Legs up in the sky with the devil in your eyes. Let me hear you say you want it all. It's a killer, you'll be banging on my chest, bang, bang, gorilla.
Alright, we got a lot of music to start this show off.
Yeah,
so,
a little technical difficulty, I don't know. Computer's acting
hello,
crazy, but go ahead.
And welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay today on this Super Bowl preview Friday, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and welcome to the show. It's time, ladies and gentlemen. We've built up to it, and it is here. Give us a call, Super Bowl predictions and more at 718-664-9098. And like always, hit us up with your picks. We've been getting them in. They're flying from all over the country at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Also, check out our website at rayandtaytoday.com. Tweet at us at Twitter, at rayandtaytoday, Facebook, the whole nine, Ray. Real quick, let them know, busy, busy sports and Super Bowl weekend and the Super Bowl preview show. Let them know.
So we got a lot going on, and most of it is centered around football. But we'll get there. Be patient. We'll talk about quickly in breaking news. We'll talk about some changes that NASCAR announced yesterday. Very interesting. Makes it all about winning. So we'll talk about that. The NBA All-Star Reserves were announced. We'll tell you who they were and who was left off. And we had some snubs. One snub in particular. Hometown, Brooklyn. We'll talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL Honors and the Hall of Fame. That's going to be
Saturday
announced
night.
This weekend on Saturday night. And then we'll do it. Then we'll turn the page. Oh, we'll talk a little bit about sports coming up this weekend. We've got a big ACC matchup in basketball. We've got a couple interesting games in the NBA and in college. We'll get into that. And then it's all about the pigskin. We'll talk about Super Bowl 48. We'll start our preview. We'll bring on our guest, a guest of the show. You may know him as Reister's Never Wrong, George Reister, former Oregon Duck and NFL tight end, played his career mostly with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Always
never got
insightful.
To play in a big game, though. We'll have to talk to him about that, you know.
Always insightful about football, and definitely will tell us about what it's like to play in the big game or you know, what he's heard from his fellow players. So we'll get into that. We'll have a great discussion like we do with George. And then at the end of the show, Ray and Tay will break it down. We'll give you our predictions for Super Bowl 48. The one thing I will say is weather looks like it won't be a factor. So it'll be
kickoff might be 41.
High 30s, low 40s, not a lot of wind. So all those people that were worried about weather, non-issue. So it'll just be X's and O's
football, and
football on the field.
That's how it should be.
So
the NFL
dodged a bullet for sure.
Yeah, they definitely did. So let's get it cooking, man. Break down NASCAR so how my boy Jimmy Johnson can win again in a different way.
So NASCAR changed their playoff series. It's kind of funny that they did it Super Bowl week. I'm sure that was scheduled by them. So they overhaul the chase format. And basically what they've done is they've made it so that now instead of 12 drivers, 16 drivers make it to the chase, and then every three races, so every 3 weeks, you drop down. So you go from 16 to 12, 12 8-4, and then on the final race in Homestead, the top four racers who are still in contention, the highest finishing racer of the four wins. So you don't have this chase for points. You don't have this strategic, let me just gather points. It's about winning.
It's all about the winning.
It's about finishing ahead of everybody else. And so from all I can tell, it looks like it's the right thing to do. And I don't know how you could not like it. I don't know how, as a fan, as a crew chief, as a race team, I don't know what there is not to like. So kudos to NASCAR. It looks like they did the right thing, and they kind of had the best of both worlds because they cater to the hardcore NASCAR fan, and they cater to the casual fan as well.
I think it's a great job, and I think you're right. They're smart, and it's going to bring in a lot of revenue, a lot of money, and, you know, it's good to sort of always evolve with your game. They said they spoke to the fans about it, so that's great. I'm happy for them. Now, what I really want to talk about, I don't want to sort of negate what's happening out here in Phoenix right now, the Phoenix Open. You know, things are going well. Bubba Watson was in the lead. I don't know if he's still currently in the lead. I didn't check that out, but it is the Waste Management Phoenix Open. So you got to like that because everybody is being efficient and not being wasteful. And that's what everything is all about. And, you know, this nice, healthy, warm climate out here in Phoenix. So today it's a little cold front, a little cloudy, a little chilly today. New York would laugh at us because Phoenix chilly, it's like 67. So I'm sure you guys would. Hey, no, you guys would take that in a minute. And actually, Matt Jones has taken back the lead from Bubba Watson -6. So, and Bubba's at -5. So that's kind of cool. But let's get to the NBA, right? You know, we're building up. Yesterday they announced it. We got the All-Star reserves, the East, the West. You want to read the list off, or you just want to go right into who got jerked?
Well, let's talk about who got jerked. It turns out, look, it's always hard because whenever you say somebody shouldn't have made the team, then you ask yourself, well, who would you leave off?
Right.
But I got to say that the one guy we kept pushing for, and he doesn't have the mega stats, but the one guy we were pushing for to get himself an All-Star selection, Brooklyn's own Lance Stephenson, went out yesterday and put up his fourth triple-double. So leads the league this year in triple-doubles and did not make the All-Star team in the East. So to me, that's the number one snub. I think that
well, with the Pacers having the best record, you normally think from the best record you get three players. The Heat and the Spurs in the past have gotten three guys, so you figure Paul George, Hibbert got voted on. You figured Lance Stephenson would get it.
Right. So let's go through the reserves and see who we potentially would have left off, right? So in the front court, you've got Roy Hibbert, who, by the way, statistically isn't having as good a season as Lance Stephenson. So it's really just about the East needing size. So Roy Hibbert and Joakim Noah were the two big men. And then Chris Bosh and Paul Millsap. So everybody there deserved it. Although
yes,
you could argue
first time having a great season.
First time for
Atlanta
Millsap.
Hawks.
Yeah, first time for Millsap. Definitely, you know, he deserved it. Now, in the backcourt, you had John Wall, so really the only point guard taken, and then Joe Johnson and DeMar DeRozan.
Right. And DeMar DeRozan, Toronto's in first place in the Atlantic, the number four seed, right? I guess you could argue Brooklyn. Now, they did go on a run without Deron Williams, and Joe Johnson has been their best player all season, had a couple of buzzer beaters. He's been really clutch at the end of games, fourth quarter, has been scoring. And so I guess you could debate, you know, should Lance Stephenson be there over Joe Johnson? And that's an interesting debate. or even DeRozan. But, you know, those are the two that you would say Stevenson could replace. And, you know, hey, if you're a Toronto or Brooklyn Net fan, you're beating your chest saying, you know what, our guy deserves it too. So that's the East. You know, that's up for debate. You know, what are you going to say, right? Maybe Lance gets it next year. You know, Brooklyn's upset, but you got a Brooklyn Net. He's not from Brooklyn, but you got a Brooklyn Net. Then in the West, why don't you tell them who made the West, and we'll figure, say basically who maybe got left off and who the commissioner will appoint, because Kobe Bryant will still be injured and not play.
Right. So in the West, you have in the front court, you have LaMarcus Aldridge make it for his third time, probably
deserves
the most
it,
deserving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You have Dirk Nowitzki making it for the 12th time.
Yep.
You have Dwight Howard making it for the 8th time. And so the West went with three forwards, essentially three big men and four guards, whereas the East went with four big men and three guards. And in the guard category, you've got James Harden making it for the second time.
And then
Chris
three-point guards.
Yeah. Chris Paul for the 7th time, Tony Parker for the 6th time, and your boy, Damian Lillard for the Portland Trail Blazers making inaugural.
That's my man. He deserves it. My gripe or my question is, so Chris Paul, he played 34 games, missed 14 games with injury, was playing at MVP level, so I don't have a problem with that. I'm not sure will he be ready or be healthy for the game, so we'll see about that. Kobe, we know, will not. So I see Harden going in a starting lineup. But with the snubs, when you look at the West, do you say, okay, Kobe's gone, you got a lot of guards, do you put in a big man or do you bring another shooting guard? And then that's where it gets interesting, because I don't know what shooting guard you would take. You know, I'm looking at the rosters, and I would say right now DeMarcus Cousins – and Anthony Davis are probably the two guys that should probably make the roster, maybe an outside David Lee or Monte Ellis. So where would you go?
Well, they're the most deserving, DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know where
playing.
You go with that, because if you're replacing a guard, do you need to replace him with another guard on the roster? So the good thing for the West, though, is they took four guards as their reserve. So I think ultimately, like you said, they'll put James Harden in the starting lineup, and they'll add, because it's in New Orleans, I think they'll add Anthony Davis as opposed to DeMarcus Cousins.
I think that's probably the smart move for the commissioner, right? Everybody wants to, you know, pay it forward with New Orleans, and it's good for the owner, new owner Tom Benson, and the Pelican fans, and he's a rising star. This guy's been playing great lately. A lot of double-doubles, a lot of 20 and 10 games, 3-4 blocks a night sometimes. Anthony Davis has definitely been stepping it up. So,
yeah,
it'll be fun.
Looks like we have a caller to the show. Let's see what the caller's got to say. Hello, welcome to Ray and Tay. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Mike in Pittsburgh. How's
it
going?
Hey, Mike. How you been?
Mike, how's it going?
Good. Hey, I heard you guys talking some NBA, so I wanted to bring up the subject about tanking. I'm a diehard Boston Celtics fan, and it was really funny the other night when Evan Turner hit the game-winning shot against Boston. The Philadelphia fans were actually upset with Turner because they want to get a worse record than Boston, and actually put Boston ahead of Philly for the third worst record in the league. And, you know, guys, I have to admit, I'm a diehard Celtics fan, but I'm all for the tanking, only for this year, because – in my opinion, there's four players coming out. The two guys from Kansas, Jabari Parker, and Exum, the point guard from Australia, that can actually really help turn the team around. And I just kind of find it – I almost feel bad about it, guys, because when you talk about losing on purpose, it's everything, you know, that you stand against, you know, what you want kids to learn. But I just find it fascinating this year. You know, you look at the Milwaukee's, the Orlando's. What teams are doing to try to do bad?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, you are right. But here's the thing, though.
As a Celtics fan, remember that the Celtics thought that they were going to get
Tim Duncan.
and ended up getting Chauncey Billups. Didn't work out. Chauncey Billups ended up down the road being quite a player. So tanking is a little dangerous, but you're right. This is one of those special years. I look at the 2003 draft with LeBron. Darko Milicic was number two, but you had Dwayne Wade, you had Chris Bosh, you had Carmelo, and also the 84 draft with
84,
Jordan.
86 was
and,
good too.
This is unbelievable. Those drafts. So this draft, while it might not have the LeBron or Hakeem or the marquee player at the top, I don't know that Joel Embiid is that guy, but you're right though to have five, maybe even more players that potentially.
Right, I throw Marcus Smart in there too with those four that you mentioned. Just to give you a nice five potential stars.
Yeah, so tanking is happening. It's a reality, and. I don't know. It's hard to stomach because it's an 82-game season, so it's not like football where you could tank and you only got to, have a bitter taste in your mouth 16 times. It's 82 games, and Boston had such a great first month of the season. Everybody thought, oh, my God, they've got the young coach and everything's great, and then Rondo's going to come back. So, look, you're better off in this draft with the top five, top six pick. So the reality is I think GMs and coaches just kind of look the other way this year and hope that they get one of those, outstanding college players. So it's a reality. I hate it. It's a reality, and I think you're right, Mike. This is one of those years where you hold your nose and you just pretend like you're it's June already.
Well, the thing that's interesting, guys, is with the NBA trade deadline coming February 20th. You're going to see some total moves. And teams like the Lakers, even Cleveland now, who thought they were going to go to the playoffs are kind of in position, two games away from one of those top five picks. So I just find it fascinating what these GMs are going to do here in the next couple weeks to completely make their roster terrible. There's going to be some good players out there for some of these top teams that jump on it, to take them to, maybe a contender level.
I wouldn't be surprised if Adam Silver, who takes over from David Stern this weekend, as his first act as commissioner, either overtly or covertly reaches out to the GMs and says, don't make a mockery of this. You know what I mean?
Right. Let's not go
make
crazy.
Make trades, but let's not go crazy. Let's not totally tank it. We still have a product that we're selling to our sponsors.
But remember, the rules for trading are still, the parameters are still, you got to at least be 80% to the contract. So it's not going to be so imbalanced. Look, I could see the Sixers maybe moving to Spencer Hawes. Golden State and Portland and Phoenix all need, if they want to go for the playoff push, especially Portland and Golden State. Maybe even the Clippers, a big guy. Look, signing Turkoglu looks like it's going to work out. He actually had a great game two nights ago. And then I think Boston can move a Chris Humphries. There's guys that very easily could help rosters. So it's going to be fascinating, along with the Gerald Wallace. Who knows? So, hey, but listen, Mike, what this show's about, man. I want to hear it. Who are you taking in the Super Bowl, Seahawks or Broncos?
Here's the thing, guys. Usually I can come on and give you an educated opinion who's going to win throughout the years in the Super Bowl. I have no idea, guys. I have absolutely no idea. I think Seattle is overall the better team, but I think with Peyton Manning there and it looks like the weather's going to be, good, I think that offsets it. But I just can't tell you. Either way, and I hate to do it because I always have an opinion, but I have no idea. I mean,
That's honest.
Yeah, and I could see, Seattle winning by a few touchdowns. I could see Denver. I could see a close game. I could just see this playing out so many ways. So I guess that's the best answer I can give you guys.
Well, look, point spread has gone from around a pick'em to 1 or 2 points either way. So, most people agree, and it's kind of a coin flip. I bet if you play this game 10 times, it might be 5-5.
5-5, it's a great
very rare second time in the last 20 years that you get the number one offense against the number one defense. So
here's the thing, guys, is from a betting perspective, if you like Seattle, you should wait until game time because the public loves Peyton Manning, and the closer we get to the game, the more money that's going to come on Denver. So I think by game time, you might see a point spread, 3.5 points. So if you like Seattle, you should wait up until game time and then jump on them.
You're right. You're definitely right. I don't know if it will jump to 3.5. I could see 3 and 3. But I think, you know what, might switch it, and you might be right, Mike, it is that weather. I mean, if you got a kickoff at 41 and maybe the low during the game or the end of the game at 30 or 31, 32, it's got to give Manning a little edge. The wind, you know, at most from 6 to 10, maybe 12 miles per hour, that's not bad at all. So it's going to be fascinating. So, all right, Mike, well, look,
Mike,
thanks
for
calling, and we'll definitely
you're watching it indoors, I hope, right? Staying warm.
Oh, yeah. Take care, guys.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you
call.
Soon. Thanks. Mike is great, and he's right about the NBA tanking, and he's right about the Super Bowl, okay? You know, and we're going to get into it in a second, so let's keep it moving. That NBA stuff, we will get to it, and Ray and Tay will keep you up to date with all the trades and trade rumors coming up. Let's talk college hoops right now. Or real quick, this weekend, NBA is, you know, they're great with marketing with the NFL. The Super Weekend, it is in New York, New Jersey. So tonight you've got the Oklahoma City Thunder and Kevin Durant, the MVP, like yesterday, against the Brooklyn Nets. And then Saturday night, very smart, LeBron James and the world champion Miami Heat come into Carmelo Anthony's house in Madison Square Garden and playing the Knicks, and they're on fire, trying to salvage this homestand, and they're 4-3, trying to go 5-3. So what do you think about these two games, and do you think the home teams could win, Brooklyn and the Knicks?
So the Knicks are playing a lot better, and Miami
definitely
is shaky right now, but under the lights, and against a New York team that's really banged up. I mean, New York has no size. The Knicks, other than Tyson, we really have
and
no size.
And my man
size.
Jeremy
Everybody
Tyler.
And your man
yo,
Jeremy
he's
Tyler.
A star, yo. I love it.
People, no, he's not. He's playing minutes. He's not as hard as this.
Great.
Good young player. So the weakness that Miami has is up front, and the Knicks can't really take advantage of it. So I like Miami in this game. I think Miami, under the bright lights of Saturday night at Madison Square Garden, 8:30, I think Miami takes care of business on that one. Now, Oklahoma City, they are on fire. And
yeah.
Kevin Durant is really
they put
doing
it on the Heat the other
big,
night. We
big
talked about that
things.
Game.
What is it, 12 straight games of 30 or more? And now people are saying,
amazing,
get rid of Russell Westbrook because
nah,
this is
yeah,
the real Kevin
crazy.
Durant. I don't know about that. But
nah.
I think that OKC is good, and Brooklyn is just as hot, though. So I actually think Brooklyn's going to hold home court and win this game. And Kevin Durant will get his, but I think Brooklyn squeaks one out.
Yeah, I see LeBron, Melo, and Durant all scoring over 30 in those games. But actually, we'll take both home teams. I think the Knicks want to finish strong. I think the Heat are just going through a little, you know, mid-season blues, and I think it will continue. So I think, you know, Dwayne Wade, whether he plays or doesn't play, wasn't a factor against OKC. So I'll take both home teams. Now, Duke-Syracuse. What's fascinating about this, though, Ray, is that Syracuse – and Duke is starting to get consistency from Jefferson, Suleiman, and then if Dawkins can play another good game, they actually do have a shot to beat Syracuse. My problem is you don't know how Parker and Hood match up against Grant and C.J. Fair and, you know, the whole Syracuse team. It could come down to the fact that Ennis, the point guard for Syracuse, is just too much as a freshman for Duke's guards and takes care of Thorin and Dawkins and Suleiman and just puts it on them. I think Syracuse stays undefeated, and I think that they win this game. Both of them were tested the other night. Syracuse and Arizona were tested a little bit, but I think Syracuse beats Duke in a very good game. Like
really?
You know, maybe 73-70.
I think Duke goes up there and beats a Syracuse team, which might be the best thing for them. Is to lose
right,
at
right.
home in the Carrier Dome, get shaken up a little bit. Duke
You're
is
going
one of
Coach
those
K,
weird
huh?
teams. Yeah, it's funny because this is not a typical Coach K team, but Duke
not.
Is one of those teams that when they're on, they have perimeter players, but they don't do anything that Duke historically does, right? They don't, they're not that tough. They don't really defend that well. And what they have is these swingmen that can, if they're on, they can give you trouble. But let's talk about a couple other games, right, in college basketball. So you've got Kansas at Texas. So you got right. 6 versus 25. You got Ohio State's probably going to drop out of the
fall
top
out,
spot
man.
Because
that
they lost
night.
Earlier
Ugh.
This week. But they're playing Wisconsin. And you've got another top 25 matchup in Oklahoma and Iowa State. So good matchups in the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC. I still can't get used to saying Duke at Syracuse is an ACC game.
Hey, it was interesting to see Cincinnati last night beat Louisville, 13 against 12. That was a good matchup. That Cincinnati team, you know, you got to love Kilpatrick. Been in Cincinnati forever and clutch performer, and it's interesting to watch the Cincinnati team play. I don't know if Louisville is going to be as strong come down, you know, the end of the season in March Madness as they were last year. So Russ Smith is going to miss his boys that are in, you know, Gorgie Jang and Siva and the pros. He's going to miss them. So,
well, and Bahannon had his issues. So, yeah, I don't know if Louisville has another run in them. But,
right, Bahannon transferred to Colorado State, right?
Yeah.
I think it was Colorado State.
Yeah,
he got
kicked off the team first, and then he transferred.
Yeah.
It was nice to see Florida, my Florida team, at number 3, won last night. Michigan at number 10.
Gators. Yeah,
they
beat
took
Purdue.
Care of Purdue. So, two good conference wins for both teams. Yeah, when we turn the corner in February, we're going to have to start talking about some college basketball. It should be fun.
Go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
No, I said this year is going to be fun, and there's no mega team. I mean, maybe Arizona, but other than that, you know, you got to like it when there's 15 teams that can win the national championship. So that's a fun prospect.
Definitely going to be fun. I was going to say, let's jump into talking about a little bit of NFL honors and the Hall of Fame. Now, I want to ask you, is it time to put in, since they finally put in Carter, did they open the door, and is it time to put in Andre Reed and or Tim Brown, or did just one of them get in? Because you know Walter Jones is getting in. You know Derrick Brooks is getting in. Who else will you think is going to join them Saturday night on Fox?
So I think they're all Hall of Famers in my book. All the guys that are prospects, right? Jerome Bettis.
Final 15, yeah.
And
some great people.
Andre Reed and Tim Brown. I think they're all Hall of Famers. So I think it's a matter of finding that right year where the right number of people go in. So are they Hall of Fame worthy? Yes. You know, do they have to wait? Probably. I think the next man up is probably Strahan in terms of the people that didn't make it. So I think Strahan might be the next man up because he and Warren Sapp, to me, are very, very close. Unlike the war of words between them, which I really don't understand, but that's between two grown men, so who am I?
Right, because Warren was basically putting his hand on the desk for Simeon Rice and saying that Simeon Rice basically did what Strahan did but a little bit better. It comes down to that, basically. And, you know, Warren's going to stick up for his teammate. And the fact that he was saying Strahan was going against right tackles, which is true, you know. So, I don't know.
All right.
So let me ask you this, though. Does Marvin Harrison have to wait? Is he first-time ballot?
So let me ask a question. If you had to choose, you were the quarterback, and you had to choose between Marvin Harrison, Tim Brown, and Andre Reed, I contend they're all Hall of Famers, who would you pick as your receiver?
Well, that's hard. I don't know if Peyton or Harrison a little bit better. You know what? I got to say, to me, if I'm being honest, I think Andre Reed is the guy that I would take. He was
really?
Incredible.
I thought he was so tough.
Right. No, actually, because, you know, I mean, that Bills team was amazing, what he did and the weather he played in. Andre Reed, he was dynamic. I mean, he went across the middle. He did the post. He went, you know, fades. He went bombs. I like Andre Reed. I think
it's
his time.
Look, the good thing is they all have great values to them, right? Marvin Harrison was about as good a route runner as you could have. His precision, what he did, the professionalism that he brought to the wide receiver position was unbelievable. The guy caught 144 balls, which, you know, is still unbelievable. Even if it's in the dome, even if it's against Peyton Manning, this is not Pop Warner, right? There's still a defense playing against you. This guy was a consummate professional. If anybody's a young wide receiver out there, go get tapes of Marvin Harrison. He was a skinny dude from Syracuse, right up there with Donovan McNabb, and then got into the league and really, really set himself apart as being a just a professional wide receiver. And then you have, on the other hand, you have Tim Brown, the Heisman Trophy winner.
And they're both from different eras. Let's say that too, right? Because Marvin Harrison's in the era of Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. Andre Reed and Tim Brown are in the era of Jerry Rice, Michael Irvin, and Chris Carter. So a little bit of differences of the game.
Yeah, and so they were a little bit overshadowed in that respect by the people of their generation. But Tim Brown came in as a special teamer and a wide receiver, so a dynamic guy on both on special teams and on offense, and he was just talented. It was just, you just think of him as talented. He could run routes. He had speed. He had elusiveness. He had hands. So he had everything, all the physical gifts. You know, Marvin Harrison was a little guy. Tim Brown was bigger. And you just looked at Tim Brown and all the time. You said, where's Tim Brown? Let's make sure we have this guy covered. And at the end of the game or at the end of the season, you just looked at Tim Brown and you said, wow, this guy is productive. Now, you weren't scared of him like Randy Moss, and he didn't kill you like Jerry Rice, but he was still
He was great.
And an all-pro.
No, he was great.
And the fact that he could – and even if you don't think he was – if he was borderline Hall of Fame, then you got to look back and add the impact on special teams, and then you got to say –
and that puts him over
the
top.
Yeah, and that puts him over the top to me. So if you have any question about Timmy Brown, then you add in his special teams, and he's got to be a Hall of Famer.
No, listen, you can't disagree with that, and it's going to be exciting to watch. I think what's also going to be fascinating is checking out, you know, these awards. You know, look at NFL honors, and real quick, MVP, you got to go Peyton Manning. I don't think, you know, what he did this year, it was just too much. My question to you is Coach of the Year. When you look at Coach of the Year, you can go so many different directions. Who would you pick to win this award?
Yeah, I got to think, you know, anytime you go 13-3, so that would be John Fox and Pete Carroll. They've got to be up there. But to me, you have to take a team that you didn't expect to do as well as they did. So that's Riverboat Ron. I got to think Ron Rivera down in Carolina goes 12-4 with a team that nobody predicted would go 12-4. I didn't even expect them to go to the playoffs.
Some people didn't have them at 8-8, so
I wouldn't be surprised if any of those guys made it, and you could argue that your boy, Pagano or there's a few
Bruce
others.
Bruce
Arians out there in Arizona has a legit case. But I guess if I had to choose one guy, I didn't expect a 12-4 record.
Yeah, Ron.
I gotta say, Riverboat Ron.
Okay.
What about
now,
you?
I actually would agree with you on that. I like Arians, but I'd have to go with Ron Rivera. Now, with the offensive play of the year, I think defense will get to that. But with offense, I mean, is it just almost redundant with Peyton Manning, or do you actually look at someone like a Jamal Charles or a Megatron or Shady McCoy leading the league in rushing?
So I wouldn't have a problem like they did in 2000, you know, splitting it between Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk, just because, you know, one got the MVP and one got the Offensive Player of the Year.
Or last year with AP and Manning.
Yeah, except that Manning's year was so outrageous.
So dominant.
And 55 touchdowns and almost 5,500 yards. And really, the NFL was a puppet, you know, in his hand. Five guys with 10 touchdowns. I got to think he wins both. I got to think you got to give him.
Okay.
He was the most outstanding
more of a
offensive
discussion.
Player.
Yeah, and then, so then there's really more of a discussion at AP Defensive Player of the Year. Or do you just jump at Luke Kuechly or Robert Quinn or Robert Mathis? This is interesting.
Yeah, you know, I would take the Seattle secondary.
Richard Sherman.
Kind of influential, you know, Thomas, Sherman, Chancellor. But if you had to go one guy, that's tough. Keekly was on a winning team. Quinn's team didn't make the playoffs.
He had 19 and a half. He dominated. Robert Mathis played amazing for the Colts, and he's older.
Mathis played amazing. He did make the playoffs.
You know, without Freeney, and people were saying Mathis wasn't really all this and all that, I think Mathis was amazing this year. I'd have to go Robert Mathis.
You know who might also get consideration? Navarro Bowman. You know, maybe he didn't have statistically such a, you know,
no,
19
he was
and
up
a half
there
sacks
in tackles,
is one of those things. Yeah, tackles usually don't get as much love as sacks, but Navarro Bowman was a heck of a player last year. So a lot of choices on defense.
Definitely. And, you know, just for fun, I would say, you know who I'd pick for my fantasy play of the year? It's obviously Manning for fantasy owners. If you had Manning, chances are you were in the playoffs or you could have won, or Megatron
Josh
or
Gordon.
Jamal Charles. Josh Gordon, yep. But also, you know who I like? Nick Foles, because Nick Foles got me, you know, when I lost my quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, Nick Foles got me some wins. I think Nick Foles had an amazing season coming on strong for the Eagles. Killed the Raiders, had some great games. So I think Nick Foles is a dark horse. He probably won't win it. But if not, you could go with, you know, Gordon, McCoy, Jamal Charles, you know. But I think about fantasy, you got to think of guys that maybe, you know, push your team over the edge that, you know,
or guys
wasn't
you were
the big
able
name.
To pick late.
Right. So you're right.
Josh
it could be
Gordon
Josh Gordon, too.
Fits into that
Oh, he
category.
Was amazing. He was definitely amazing.
Any
so,
of the Denver receivers, too. You figure the guy, no Sean Moreno, you know, after a bounce-back year. Maybe, you know, Demaryius Thomas typically went high, but Julius Thomas. You know, there were some guys that came out of nowhere to help you in fantasy.
Yeah. No, you're right, man. You're right. So hopefully our guest, George Reister, will be joining us soon. I think it's time. I think Ray and Tay need to start breaking it down and start talking Seahawks versus Broncos, Super Bowl 48 in New York, New Jersey. I can't believe I'm even saying that. I mean, growing up as kids, Ray and I mean, we just never fathomed a Super Bowl coming to New York because it was cold and you just never, you know.
Well, because
they never spoke about it.
Well, because it's in the bylaws of the NFL where they say it's got to be over 50 degrees.
50 degrees, yeah.
Average temperature on the week of the Super Bowl or the day of the Super Bowl. So we never imagined a Super Bowl in New York. And I tell you what, I was just on Super Bowl Boulevard. I checked it out. There's a toboggan ride. It's actually pretty cool. It's about 5 or 6 stories high. It's $5. You rent your little toboggan. You go up. You walk up the stairs, and then you go down. It's actually pretty cool. In the middle of Broadway, you're going down as if it's a mountain, as if you're on snow. That's pretty cool. The NFL Network and ESPN both are sitting up there pretty strong. There's some interactive games there for the kids. You can kick a field goal. You can get your picture taken with the Lombardi Trophy. You've got a few corporate sponsors. Papa John's is out there with the car giving out pizzas. Microsoft is there with an Xbox station. So there's kids playing their little Xbox, simulating
awesome.
Seattle versus
Hey, I look forward to
the,
it next year, taking my boys, Elijah and William, will love it next year out here in Glendale, Arizona. Ray might have to get on the plane and come out here and visit because
it's
going to be awesome.
It's nicer in the warm weather, believe me.
It definitely is.
It's finally warming up. So for the first few days, it was freezing, but it's warming up a little bit. I think they did a great job, though. They locked up Broadway, and the kids love it. The fans love it. It's pretty crowded. So if you can deal with the crowds, it's a fun time. So good for the NFL. Good for New York. They did a good time, made it entertaining. But you know what? All of that is great, but we need to start talking the game on Sunday. You know, all this is lead up. All this is appetizer.
You know,
talk about
main
course.
I think our caller said it best. This is a hard game to pick, Ray. I've gone back and forth in my head, different scenarios, and I can see both teams winning. I don't see, like what he kind of said, you know, anybody winning by two touchdowns. I just don't see that. But anywhere from 3 to 8, maybe the most 10 points, I could make a case for both teams winning this game. I wanted to ask you, let's first look at the coaches. Not necessarily who has the edge or the advantage, but I don't know. What do you think about John Fox and Pete Carroll? Do either one of them bring something to this game that you think that they might switch up something, scheme, surprises, something unexpected? Who would you think to be like Riverboat Ron to roll the dice in this game, Fox or Carroll?
So I think that both of these guys, pretty interesting that in the league – that's dominated by offense, you have two defensive coordinators. Essentially, two guys came up through the defensive track, are the head coaches. They both started their career as cornerbacks, as secondary coaches, right?
Yeah.
And worked up to be defensive coordinators and then eventually head coaches. And Pete Carroll had a couple stints in the NFL and then had that USC, the long stint at USC in between. So I think they'll both be themselves, frankly. I don't know that either of them is going to change. Now, in terms of pulling a Sean Payton a few years ago, the 2009 Super Bowl,
when he did the onside kick
to start the second half.
Probably won him a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I really do. I think that plus the Porter pick six also, you know, those two plays were essentially Peyton Manning's demise. So I think that if anybody would do it, maybe Pete Carroll would. But I think both of these coaches are going to stick to their guns. John Fox is a steady-as-they-go quarterback. You know, he went to the Super Bowl. In fact, I was at that Super Bowl. That was the Carolina Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Janet Jackson Super Bowl.
Yeah. The Panthers.
That's been big on Twitter this week. It was trending
really?
The other day, that Super Bowl.
Okay. All right.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
I was there. I was in Houston. So I think both coaches, but bottom line, though, I think both coaches are going to stay true to themselves, and both coaches are confident in their players, and I don't expect much in the way of deception. I mean, Peyton Manning's going to do his thing on the offensive line, Omaha, 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 and he's going to try and change things up. Where I do think you might get some deception is from the Broncos in terms of they might run the ball more than you think. You know, they might spread out. The Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks are very good tackling.
Manning is never afraid to run it.
No,
he will hand it off time after time after time. And, you know, what Manning does is he will put his team in the best situation. If you've got, you know, basically if he sees the middle open, he's going to hit Thomas and Welker across the middle. If he sees, you know, the safeties playing, you know, high and not coming down in the box, he's going to run Moreno. You know, if he sees the one-on-one out there for Decker, he's going out there. He finds the guy that has the least traffic around him. He tries to throw him the ball. And I think that's the best thing about Peyton Manning. It's not about the player. It's all about the situation and the openness. And so with Peyton, he's sort of a surgeon like that. Like, you know, John Gruden says, he's the sheriff, man, and he breaks it down. I'll tell you this. For me with these coaches, though, I think – what you said is true. I think these guys are going to stick to their guns, and they're going to be like, you know what, let the players decide it on the field. We are this, and we are this. And so that's what's going to happen with these coaches when these two teams face off in battle.
Yeah, I think we have our guest.
I think we have our guest
in the show. Hey, George, welcome. You're on with Ray and Tay today. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we
can hear you good, George.
Okay.
All right.
How's everything going? You ready? You excited, George?
I'm really excited about this Super Bowl. I normally don't get too pumped up about Super Bowls, but the last two have really, brought back a lot of passion for the games for me and made me want to be out there on the field again.
Are we going to see you at somebody's training camp next year?
Yeah, right, man. It's a young man's game, right?
It's a young man's game. It's good to be 21 again, 22.
I know. If that were the case, sign me up.
Yeah, right? So let's get into it. So I know you've thought about it. Let's talk about the game. Let's start with what everybody's talking about, the number one rated offense with Peyton Manning, the record-setting offense, against the Legion of Boom and that Seattle number one rated defense. So how do you break down that matchup?
Well, see, the fact that the weather is going to be clear is a big deal. And when you think about the Legion of Boom defense, those guys are terrific. But first of all, Brandon Browner is out. That's going to be a big deal. And Peyton Manning has four receivers on the field, including Julius Thomas, who are playmakers. Ordinarily, teams that Seattle faces, they usually will face one wide receiver and then maybe a wide receiver and a tight end that are a really good combination. He has three guys who are vertical threats. They are threats over the middle. And then he has Knowshon Moreno behind him. And then when you add even on top of that, he's Peyton Manning, and he's probably the most – accurate quarterback in the history of the NFL as far as ball placement goes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my question. is in terms
scary.
Of who does Cam Chancellor take, and who, you know, when you start spreading them out, there's going to be some mismatches all over the field, for sure.
When you look at Seattle has actually given up some big plays this year to tight ends against.
The Texans,
get matched
that
up,
game.
Yeah, they get matched
Daniels,
up against their. Yeah, they get matched up against their linebackers. So when they're going to have a little bit of help over the top, either on Decker or Demaryius Thomas, and don't be surprised if you see Julius Thomas have a big game if he gets a lot of one-on-ones with the Seattle linebackers. They're good at tackling, not so good at covering.
You know, that's a good point. Now let's flip it to the other side. Now you also have a matchup of an underrated Denver defense against a Seattle offense that has really relied on kind of steady play by Russell Wilson and then really exceptional play by Marshawn Lynch. So what do you think about that matchup?
Listen, I don't know if I would call what Russell Wilson has done over the past 6-7 weeks, including the playoffs, as steady. It's been marginal.
He's been struggling.
Let's just really call it. He hasn't been turning the ball over. But then at the same time, he hasn't been special. But he did make that fourth down play last week, and that was a big deal. But he's going to have to show up at some point in time because this Broncos team reminds me of the last time Peyton Manning won the Super Bowl. I was in Jacksonville. We rushed for 375 yards against the Indianapolis Colts. And everybody's like, they can't stop the run. They'll never win the Super Bowl. What happened in playoffs? One of the best rushing defenses in NFL playoff history. So you look, everybody questioned last week, is Denver going to be able to stop the run? Is Denver going to be able to stop the run? What did they do? Stop the run. This week?
Yeah.
What do you think is going to happen? They are going to stop the run, and if Seattle gets down, they cannot come back. They cannot score enough points to come back against Peyton Manning.
Okay.
Well, I agree with
that.
So,
George, let me ask you this, because that's sort of interesting, and it almost leads to what I want to ask you. For both teams, let's go off the star names and the grid. Give me one key player from both teams that you think that could make a difference that could, you know, sway the game either way?
I would say on Denver's team, it's going to have to be either Terrence Knighton or Sean Phillips.
Right.
Because those guys, they're going to get some pressure on Russell Wilson at some point in time, and if they can keep him from running all around, doing his acrobatics and gymnastics and Fran Tarkenton impersonations. if they can,
George, you're not even old enough to remember Fran Tarkenton.
Listen, I am a student. I am a football student, a student of the game. And if you don't know your young guys out there, old guys out there, if you don't know your history of football,
that's right.
Just because you see guys playing now, that doesn't mean that they're the best that ever did it.
You're absolutely right.
That's great. So what about Seattle? Give me the one guy in Seattle that might be able to.
Well, I know we want to go away from the Stars, but Russell Wilson is going to have to show up passing the ball. He's going to have to show up. And so with that, to stay away from a star, I'm going to have to say either Golden Tate or Curse on offense is going to have to show up. But that's going to be really contingent upon Russell Wilson because the Broncos corners aren't exactly the Legion of Boom. And on defense, it's going to have to be Cam Chancellor. He's going to have to be in coverage. He's a big hitter. He likes to lay the boom. But if he doesn't cover somebody, his coverage skills are not pinpoint on Sunday, they're going to lose.
And what's interesting is he might have to cover anywhere from Julius Thomas to Wes Welker. So completely different, excellent receivers, but totally different in size and skill set.
I think they're probably going to have Maxwell on Welker.
Well, if they put Maxwell on Welker, then you're either going to have, even though he is an Oregon guy and I believe in him, you're going to have Walter Thurman III. You're either going to have Maxwell or Walter Thurman III matched up against Decker or Demaryius Thomas. Either Decker or Demaryius Thomas, because Seattle, they don't really follow people around too much.
Right. So whoever comes to that side. And Peyton will mix that up, too. He's not going to just have Demaryius go out there and just stay with Richard Sherman all day. They'll mix it up, and they'll go in motion, and you'll see Demaryius Thomas move around the field. I bet you that one. So let me ask you this, though. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say exactly. So you're going to get some matchups, and even if Seattle's defense is pinpoint, the thing that makes Peyton Manning great is that he beats great coverage with great throws, with greater throws.
Right. He throws the receivers open. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly. So, so you can be on the receiver like a blanket, and he'll put it where only the receiver can get it.
Even his ducks, right?
Even his ducks. that's a fact. I mean, his ball is not exactly the prettiest spiral that you've ever seen. But it's on target and it's catchable. That's the only thing that matters.
That's all that matters. So let me ask you this. We were joking in the beginning of the show, and Ray sort of joked with you about it being a young man's game and you suiting up and playing. But I wanted to sort of ask you. I mean, I know with the Jaguars, you never made it to the Super Bowl. Your team, did have some success. But what do you think it would have felt like, or what do you think it would have meant to you personally to play in a Super Bowl, just either for you and your family or career-wise or just as a player, that excitement? What do you think for George Reister as an NFL tight end and as a Jaguar tight end, what do you think it would have meant to play on this day?
I mean, it's the ultimate. I mean, it's one game for all the marbles, and all eyes are on you. It is the most important football game of the year, and it is not just one game. It is the actual culmination of every ounce of blood, sweat, and tears that you and your teammates have gone through together. It creates a brotherhood and a fraternity. Even while the NFL is a brotherhood and a fraternity all by itself, each particular team, each season, they all have their own bond. And when you do something special together, it makes it even just that much sweeter. And so for me, sometimes you realize things as you get older, and it's so interesting how you see guys who I know that have won Super Bowls the way that they have bonded with their teammates, because it's not an easy season. You have to go through so much. Guys get hurt. Guys get suspended. Guys step up that you didn't think were going to step up. Great players play excellent. Peyton Manning breaks records. Von Miller's out. Champ Bailey misses the majority of the season. He gets to play in his first Super Bowl. I mean, there's so many dynamics to it. And then Coach John Fox was out. He was sick. Del Rio steps into the head coaching job. Guys leave.
Yeah, Ryan Clady goes down in the beginning of the season. Your left tackle.
Well, they lose Dumervil over a fax machine. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And Percy Harvin being able to come back. That's amazing. You're right. I mean, and that's why I wanted to ask you that because, you know, a lot of people, they don't always see the human side. And I think that's an aspect that you can give to us, you know, for the audience that is so real because it is a whole season and a team and 53 men, you know, even though scout players matter and everything and all the coaches. And, I mean, so I think it's great. And that insight is so real and telling to the story of a football season and to a team.
Hey, George, so here's the thing. So we're going to get you out of here on this. So first of all, tell us where you're watching the game. And second of all, if I can read between the lines, I think I'll know what you'll say. But who's going to win the game, and what's your final score?
Okay. I'm watching the game at home, family, friends coming over. This is a big deal.
Right.
But
are you providing the dessert? You got the cupcakes going? You got the
got
cakes and everything?
Got them.
Okay.
got the dessert, got the ribs, got the wings, have some salad, some fruit. So we have a lot of healthy organic options as well.
All right, good.
Here's one of the biggest things is that I would not mind Seattle winning the Super Bowl. I like Russell Wilson. There are two Oregon guys on the team, Max Unger and Walter Thurman III. I like Richard Sherman. I like Marshawn Lynch. I'd be happy if he won.
Yeah.
But even more than all of that, I do not want Peyton Manning to lose. I played it for so many years, and he gets a bad rap sometimes from guys about, he's just the greatest regular season quarterback of all time. Listen, no, he's the greatest quarterback of all time. The only person who could even contemplate being over him, and NFL players will tell you this, is possibly Joe
Montana.
But if he wins this championship, he's pretty much up there all by himself.
So you take Manning over Brady. That's interesting.
100%. See,
okay.
Look, Here's the thing about it. Although Peyton Manning has had some pretty good coaches, he himself takes the team to another level.
Right.
He doesn't have Bill Belichick, who's one of the greatest minds of all, one of the greatest football minds. And you have to remember, they still went like 11-5 when Matt Castle was the quarterback.
Right.
And
no, you're right.
So is it Tom and what happened when Peyton Manning went down? His team won one game. Or was it two?
2-14. Yeah, that got them Andrew Luck, and Matt Castle got him and Josh McDaniels, you know, big paychecks in Kansas City and Denver.
Yeah, so people, they want to harp on Peyton Manning. Oh, he's a choker. He doesn't play when it's cold. Listen, man, there's so much stuff that goes into winning a championship. It's not just one player. It's your defense. It's a little
special
bit of luck
team.
It's a little bit of luck at the same time. So I want people to leave the man alone and really, really just everybody's always trying to nitpick and see things. But in reality, sometimes you need to just step back and realize greatness when you're looking at it and know that I am privileged to be watching this because you may never see anybody this good again.
That's right.
Wow.
People don't realize
it
until they retire.
So you got Denver.
Right,
what's your score?
What's your score?
I got Denver 34-24.
Wow. Okay, you got Denver
34
in Seattle.
Wow. All right. And who's your MVP? Does it go to the sheriff? Does it go to Manning?
Absolutely. Because don't be surprised. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but But all Peyton Manning fans, do not be surprised if he is not able to come back next season.
Oh, wow. Well, he said it's going to be medically related, right? So he has a big physical in March, and he and his father and everybody said they'll listen to the doctors.
Yeah.
So he might be John Elway.
But you know what? I could also see him coming back and winning and repeating.
Yeah.
Because I got to believe that the Broncos' defense will get a little bit better next season too. So.
Yeah.
So okay, well, listen, that's great. Let me ask you this. I just wanted to ask you this real quick. Obviously, we know how great Julius Thomas is. No one ever talks about Seattle's tight end Zach Miller. Can he be any type of a factor in this game, or is it going to have to be Baldwin and Harvin and Tate and Curse? Do you see anything from Zach Miller?
He has put up a couple big games this year, but I mean. So he could be a factor because he has put up some big games, and if the Broncos end up having to blitz to stop the run, be aware for him on some play actions. But as far as just generally how the game will most likely go, he should catch some passes. He could possibly get a short yardage touchdown or something, but. Like in a goal line situation, but other than that, he'll probably have three catches for 45 yards.
All right, great, George. Thanks so much. Hey, you know what, George? We got to have you back around the NFL draft because I know you know all the college players, you know the Pac-12 so well. So we'll definitely have you back for the NFL draft. One quick note before we get out of here: just in case, if the Seahawks do win. How do they do it?
What's the scenario?
Does Manning get picked off twice? Does Marshawn get two touchdowns and 135?
If the Seahawks win, Peyton Manning is not going to have a bad game. The only way he probably really throws a pick is like a tip interception, like one of the receivers tips the ball instead of catching it, and then one of the safeties gets it. He's going to play lights out. But the way Seattle wins is if they can get Denver into some third and longs and maybe a fumble by either Ball or Moreno, and then Marshawn Lynch goes crazy. Like, if they can't stop Marshawn Lynch from running the ball, that's how they win. If Seattle can run the football and Russell Wilson can make a couple big plays with either his legs or with his arm, and they can get if they can get over the 30-point mark, they have a chance to win.
Right, and I would add to that maybe red zone field goals. So if the Seattle defense can hold the Denver offense to field goals in the red zone,
right, bend don't break,
big.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Are you the special guest or am I the special guest, man?
Thanks, George. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Have a great Super Bowl.
All right, cool. All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you, bye.
That was awesome. Former NFL tight end George Wrighster breaking it down, giving us the insight, and also a little personal touch. All right, Ray, let's get to it. I'm going to let you take a hit at it first. Give me your breakdown. And then give me your prediction, and then I'll ride out in the sunset with my breakdown and my prediction. Where are you going,
so,
Broncos, Seahawks? Right.
So it's the number one defense against the number one offense, and I think that's ultimately – it sounds cliche, but that's ultimately where the game's going to be decided. The other side, I think Denver's defense is underrated. I think that Russell Wilson, like George said, is going to have to make some plays, and I think that he will play – a little bit better than he has been playing. So I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be able to put up some points. But ultimately it comes down to can the Seattle front four and the Seattle back four, can they pressure, can the corners, so Sherman, Maxwell, and then the safeties, Chancellor and Thomas, can they disrupt the timing of Peyton Manning's receivers? And then can the front four, Bryant, McDaniel, Clemens, Irvin, Wagner, even the front seven. Can they get to Manning fast enough? Because Manning gets the ball out so quickly. They need to get to him to hit him and get to him to shake up his timing. So I think both levels need to work together to disrupt Peyton Manning's timing. If that happens, then Seattle has a really good chance to win the game. However, Peyton Manning was touched once in the last game, let alone sacked, let alone pressured, let alone, you know, anything else. So I think the Denver offensive line is going to protect him. He might get sacked once, maybe twice, but I think ultimately Peyton Manning gets the ball away fast. I think that Denver has five legitimate receivers, and Seattle only has three true cover people, maybe four. So there's always going to be one or two players, whether it's Moreno, whether it's Thomas, whether it's Decker, who's going to have a mismatch. And I think Peyton's going to find that mismatch and take advantage of it. So I like the Denver offense essentially to win this game. And I think they will put up points. I think the Denver offense puts up 30. And I'm not sure that Russell Wilson...
God, you and George at these high school. Okay, 30.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
I'm not sure that the defense is able to put up the requisite points. So I think they win 30-23. I like Denver in this game. Peyton Manning wins
You're saying 30-23. So George had it by 10, 34-24. You got it by 7. So you're both going with the Broncos with the spread. Okay, I see it like this. I've been going back and forth, and I'm just going to throw it out there like George did. I love Peyton Manning. I'm a Steeler fan. I like the Jets. I like the Giants. But if you tell me that there's one player I want to watch play, you know, and it could be Megatron, these other guys, I want to watch Peyton Manning because you never know what he's going to do. He controls the game. He is the OC. No disrespect to guests, but like George said, he's like a coach. And I think Peyton Manning can make, you know, anything possible. And it's so fascinating to watch him play. And what I like about this team is what they've gone through in the season, the adversity, all that stuff. And I think no Sean Moreno being back home in New Jersey and all that he went through, he was like a third-string running back, and then he comes up to, you know, being the man and has really played well throughout the season, playoffs, everything. My one question is, if Manning is sort of disrupted and off his spot, and they don't have to hit him, they just have to get him off his spot, and if these Seattle corners can do what the Colts did and really jam those receivers, how do the Broncos react, and then how do they score? I know they can move the ball, but how do they get in the end zone?
They react Sean Moreno.
but listen, Seattle's the front line. I think they could stop the run, too. Now, this is the thing with Russell Wilson, two things. He's got 52 touchdowns, and he's got the most, and that ties Peyton Manning for the first 2 years of his career. So let's just say that as everybody rips Russell Wilson. And he's got the most wins, and if he wins the Super Bowl, he will have the most wins. He's tied right now with my man from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Big Ben, for the first 2 years. So Russell Wilson, as much as people like to rip him, guess what? Andrew Luck, Cam, Kaepernick, RG3, they're not here. Russell Wilson is here, even though Kaepernick was there last year. Russell Wilson is here, and there's something about this kid. Now, I'm going to let the audience know. I know you see pictures of Ray and Tate. We look like giants, like we're 6'1", 6'2". Ray's like 5'10", and Tay's like 5'11". So we're the same height as Russell Wilson, okay? He's our guy. I like Russell Wilson. For the under 6 feet crew, he represents. And I think beast mode will drop 120 to 130, maybe a touchdown. I think for some reason, Seattle gets it done.
Really?
I would look for curse. I look for Marshawn, I look for Maxwell, and I'm telling you, you're going to see something out of Bobby Wagner. I'm going 26-24, Seahawks win the Super Bowl, and my MVP is Marshawn Lynch.
Skittles.
Marshawn Lynch.
Flying
Skittles.
All around.
Skittles.
MetLife
the quiet, low-key, you know, almost sounding like a thug. He like, yo, boss. I just, I'm about my business, boss. And guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, he's about his business on Sunday, and his business will get done. It's going to be a great game. I got to throw this in. William Truth, the four-year-old, he picked the Seahawks 24-21, and even my wife is going with the Seahawks 24-23.
Oh, wow.
There you
got
it.
The Seahawk family right there.
Yeah, it's going to be a great game. It's going to be exciting. And, Ray, as much as I think Eric Decker is going to have a good game and Welker too, I think Percy Harvin's going to do something special. I really do.
He's going to pull a T.O. and come back and do big things in the playoffs?
Can I tell you? Not too many people could do what T.O. did. T.O. was amazing. I think Percy Harvin gets four for, like, 79. But on one of those kickoffs or one of those punts, he's going to get it down. If he doesn't take it all the way, he's going to take one down into already in scoring position.
And
Russell Wilson.
That's the big unknown.
Yes, and Russell Wilson scrambling
really
on those third and threes and those third and sixes. Russell Wilson will keep the drives alive to keep Manning off the field, and that's the key.
Okay. All right, so Ray picks the Broncos. Tay picks the Seahawks. We got a lot to talk about on Monday.
Oh, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, so enjoy the game. Enjoy the festivities. Enjoy the wings. Like George said at his house, enjoy the salad, the organic.
Yeah.
You know he's in California when you start talking about salad and organic food. I mean, it's all good, but you know, most people in Super Bowl put the diet aside.
Yeah, we're
going to
have a little salad.
Thing.
We'll have the little, you know, hors d'oeuvres out. I don't think we're having a big party. Maybe a couple of people over. You know, all the kids will be watching. The twins are going to be watching, Jackson and Mateus, Elijah. It's going to be fun. And I can't wait for the commercials and Bruno Mars. I think he's going to have a good surprise. He's so young getting this opportunity, but he's a good artist. Second album was great. I think he'll do a good job. So it should be fun.
All right. Well, a lot to look forward to. Come back and join us on Monday. We'll have all kinds of Super Bowl recap on Monday. So enjoy the weekend. All sports that go on this weekend, but especially at 6:35. Eastern on Sunday.
I'm hyped. How could you not be hyped, ladies and gentlemen? This is
no,
Super Bowl.
Especially this one. Number one offense against the number one defense. Peyton Manning going for really to move up a notch or two in his legacy. This is a great game. Great game. Looking forward to it.
And I will not be upset. Don't get at Tay because I will not be upset if Peyton Manning and the Broncos win, and I could see them winning. If they win, they win 27-23, but I'm going to Seahawks.
As my man Bart Scott said, can't wait.
Wait.
All right,
great.
All
everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning into a Super Bowl preview show with our guest, George Reister. And like always, we enjoy talking sports with friends. Peace. We're out.
Don't you see that I'm parked for the course? I'm not heading north.